Up next, we're talking money with the man responsible for fee-only financial planning in Ohio, founder of the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors, and expert advisor to the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Kiplinger's Personal Finance, and U.S. News & World Report. It's the only financial planning show on radio, Managing to be Wealthy, with your host, John Sestina.
Good evening. Welcome to Managing to be Wealthy. I'm John Sestina. Joining me tonight, Tyler Cook, Stephen Lucan, both certified financial planners. Good evening, guys.
Hey, John, how are you?
I'm doing great. Another good day today.
So indeed.
Sorry, Tyler.
I said indeed. Happy to be here.
Yes, indeed. You should be. You've only got one more week, right?
A couple weeks, John. Give me a couple more weeks. Yeah. A couple more weeks.
Okay.
Yep, exciting times.
That wedding is going to be a big deal,
it
Tyler.
Is. Okay, it is. Looking forward to it.
You still have time, you know.
Yeah. Don't say that too loud, John.
Well, what we want to do tonight is talk a little bit about handling of real estate in retirement. But before we get into that, there was some strong remarks by the president about the hard dollar. What was he talking about, guys?
Well, the value of the dollar continues to increase relative to other currencies. They call it the strong dollar. And, you know, that can be good or bad depending upon what side of the table you're sitting on. So, for example, if you think about it, if the dollar is worth more, then the companies who are selling products overseas, our products just got more expensive for them to buy. However, there's multinational companies that can tend to benefit from this too. So there's a give and take with everything. And again, I think when you look at this, particularly with the dollar, you've got to look at not only what it affects, you know, how it affects the United States, but also these companies. And we live in such a global world now. Everything seems to be connected with these companies and these other aspects of our economy. So a weaker dollar typically lifts the profits of multinational companies because it makes their products less expensive in the other market. So give and take. And again, if you look at the history of this stuff over, you know, decades, there's studies that have been done to see how this affects the stock market or how the stock market relates to the actual dollar. And if it's called correlation. And if so, if you go back, if you look at periods all the way back into the 70s, you know, for example, it was a positive correlation, meaning if the stock market was up, the dollar was up. But if you look at the 80s, it was the exact opposite. You look at the 90s, it was the opposite again. So it's a lot of back and forth. And then since the 2000s, the U.S. dollar has been negatively correlated to the stock market.
What causes all this strength and weakness?
I think it all goes back to supply and demand, really.
Supply and demand of the world and against
and economies.
Our dollar and our GDP and all that other stuff. So what we need to have a strong dollar is a strong economy.
Right.
That's what really boosts what it is we want to have happen. So is a strong dollar good for us or bad for us?
That's where it depends, right? It's your classic answer. It depends on so many moving pieces.
I know it's good for the foreign traveler.
It's good for the foreign traveler.
If you're going to Europe, you're going to have a good currency conversion.
Exactly right. Yeah, when I went a couple of years ago, it was just the reverse, and I was paying a lot more than I would now. Maybe we should go, Stephen.
Yeah, in 2000, I was there in 2008 in Europe, and it was $1.75 or $1.80 conversion, euro to the U.S. dollar. It was painful. Expensive trip.
Yeah.
It was. That euro was something.
I was in Spain in 2005, and it was almost two-thirds of what you got back. You know, that's how bad the ratio was.
So what we're doing is trying to help people to manage to be wealthy and deal with their financial plan. And so what you were recommending is they should all go to Europe.
Right. To visit, not to live.
No, but if you're planning one of those, you know, river cruises or cruises or whatever it is you have in mind, now might be a better time to go than any other time. So take a look at that. Well, very good, guys. So, you know, all of this is about financial planning. And eventually what's going to happen in your life is you're going to hit that benchmark, and that's that age, whatever it is. Some people think it's age 65. I mean, how did that number come about? Do you ever stop and think about that? Why is it that you retire at 65?
Well, you've asked me that question many years ago, and I didn't know an answer to it, but now I know.
Uh-oh.
But because of the way you responded, but it goes back to what Social Security.
That's right.
Social Security deemed retirement at what, originally 62?
Yep.
And then it became 65. Now it's 67.
Right. And soon it'll be 70.
Right. Particularly, I think, with Medicare, too. Yep. That played a major influence recently in the last 5-6 years that everyone wants to have maybe a paid-for health insurance until Medicare kicks in. So that's influenced society to say, okay, I'll wait at least till age 65, where both couples are on Medicare.
Right. So it's interesting, this retirement thing. When you look back in history of this country, when did people retire? Well, they didn't. I mean, our great-grandfathers worked and worked and worked until they could no longer work at all. and then somewhere along the line, it was probably Social Security, caused people to think they could retire. Of course, that was the pressure of the Depression and so on and so forth. So now we talk a lot about retirement, but the truth is, what I prefer to call all this stuff is financial independence, because it means you have options. You can choose to, quote unquote, sit on the porch, watch the grass grow, or you can go get another job, you can write the book, or you can go on a hunting trip, whatever you want to do. So what we're trying to accomplish here is accomplishing options in your financial plan.
And one of those options is even to continue to work. For
exactly.
Those people such as yourself.
Oh, you mean like, hey, come on, I'm down to 50 hours a week,
right,
Stephen.
Right, exactly. So some people want to work. They enjoy what they do.
Absolutely.
Good for them. And they just continue to work by choice, not because they have to.
Exactly. That's what we're trying to do, giving you the options. That's what real financial planning is. So that's why you've got to balance it all out now. Prepare for whatever your objectives are. Set those objectives, one of which may be retirement. And you may say, as we find with our clients, when we're projecting where they're going, we find out that we show them that they're ahead of their goal and say, you can quit at 63 instead of 65. And it's interesting to watch their faces, isn't it, when
sure.
When you do that? Because now all of a sudden they look, well, yeah.
What do I do?
Okay. Or you can keep on saving and retire at a higher level. And it's really, it's fun. And that's what financial planning is. It's not always no, 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 no. You can't do this. You can't do that. It's about getting to the place. It's about getting where you want to go. It's having enough to accomplish your goals, whatever they are, educating the kids, taking care of grandma, or whatever is going on in the world. So as you hit that age, whatever it is, you're still going to need a place to live, as I recall. And so in that regard, you're going to need a home in retirement. So what good thoughts should we give people about a home in retirement?
Well, I mean, you got to plan ahead. You've got to plan ahead because to your point about what age you retire, for a lot of people, they're thinking, man, I've got that mortgage payment hanging over their head. And that becomes the anchor that dictates everything else. It depends on, you know, that could be the leash, for example, of how far you can actually go and what your lifestyle looks like in retirement. So planning ahead is key. Before you say, okay, I'm going to retire at 65, it needs to happen many, many years ahead of time. And that discussion around the house can be whether or not it's, you know, downsizing, if you're going to move, do the snowbird thing and go south, if you're going to hang on to it and try and rent it out. So we're going to talk through all those different pieces tonight because they're all connected in some way and both have their pros and cons.
Right. And one of the things to know, when you hit that level, when you hit retirement, you don't want to be saddled with debt. We do want you to be out of debt. So that should be among your goals. Get rid of all the debt you can, pay it all down. So when you hit that marker, you can just run and not be dry. As you said, use that anchor of the mortgage or the car payment or whatever else the case may be.
We'll talk about the other options too, like renting. I don't know why. Whenever you say renting, it's got a negative persona or perception,
right,
or stigma about it. And I've never really understood that. I think it's probably just an ego thing for most Americans. And as we talk about with all of our clients, you know, ego can get in the way. It's an obstacle to achieving enough. And you see that with the house. I can't tell you how many conversations we've had in the last month or two just about buying a house. And Stephen, you were telling me the other day, Columbus is one of the hottest real estate markets in the country right now.
Fourth hottest real estate market I read this week.
Yeah, so that's great.
It's amazing. Yeah.
So it's fantastic.
You want to buy my house, Stephen?
Yeah.
No, thank you.
So those are the decisions to talk through, and we'll get more in depth in those here in a little bit.
Yes, and you have to get your mind right about what is the house? What is it? And there's a whole lot of emotional, psychological things to be considered in that. For example, some people, they just need the emotional attachment to saying, this little piece of ground is mine.
Right.
And for other people, they have other goals. They want to travel around the world more or whatever the case may be. So we'll pick up on this after the break. When we come back, we'll give you more hints about how to plan for your retirement.
You're listening to the only financial planning show on radio. Taking your questions tonight is WTBN's own resident money expert, certified financial planner, author of Planning a Successful Future, and founder of one of America's leading financial planning firms, John Sestina.
Welcome back to Managing to Be Wealthy. I'm John Sestina, and with me tonight, Tyler Cook, Stephen Lucan, both certified financial planners, and we're attempting to help you with your retirement planning. You know, when we talk about financial planning, most people tend to think about that as strictly investing, and that's one of the words they tend to use about a house. I did a thing with Joel Riley the other day about assets that are just assets and those which are really investments, and that which is a real investment is something that produces an income, goes for a profit. Asset is just something you own. That could be your home. That could be gold. That could be silver. That could be, you know, the little little baby dolls you had, or even Star Wars, Stephen.
Right.
So all
lots of Star Wars. Yeah.
All those little goodies. Those are just plain assets, not investments. Right. But the home is a big one for people when they're doing their planning. And so let's kick that around a little bit and give some folks some thoughts on their financial planning and home ownership or home.
One of the things I like to start with in talking to clients about their house is that going to be your final house? Most people don't even think about that, and they're in their 50s. Everything's great with the kids, and then all of a sudden, it's an empty house. You have the couple or single, and then I try to explain, well, what's it going to be 20 years from now? Are you going to be in the same house? Plan for that, whether it's elder-friendly, you can get around, not as many steps, and then try to determine if that's step one. And then you can help say, okay, if it's not your house, where do you want to live? What kind of house do you want to move to? When do you want to move? And I'm a little cautious when people say, well, I'm going to wait until I'm in my 80s. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, will you be able to adapt?
Right.
Right. Adapt to a new environment, adapt to a new house, learn the ins and outs of that house, all the creaks that we all know about, the imperfections of the house. So that's one of the things I like to start with.
That's really a biggie, because so many people come and they say, I can think of one client right now. He's bought a monstrous house. I mean, like 15,000 square feet size house, and has five children. And so that's good. But the problem with that is, the first child's already out of the house and into college. They just moved into the house.
Oh, wow.
So they have this house with four remaining children, and it won't be long, given their ages, they're all going to be gone. Then what's going to happen? Are they all going to come home? Maybe they are. Maybe they aren't.
Parents like to think so.
They like to think. Parents like to think the kids are coming home, but that doesn't seem to be the tendency these days, at least. I mean, the families we know it is a little different. So first, you're right. You're right on target there. The first thing to think about is this your final home? And can it be? And you're bringing reality to the case. You know, if you have a lot of stairs and your knees go out, how do you climb the stairs? Do what Roseanne did and buy one of those scooters. Go up and down the staircase if you want to do that. Or you can move to a flat house. And Bobby's a nurse, and she reads a lot of material on this stuff. And one of the things she's discovered that the consultants are saying now is, when you're retired, you should not live in a house with no stairs.
Because exercise.
Yeah.
Right.
And it gives you the exercise. So all these people are rushing to the single floor homes, and those are really not healthy for you. So you ought to consider a home that is a little more exercisable, shall we say,
right,
so that you get around that. So these are kind of things. I always tell people, if you're going to retire and move somewhere, to your point, Stephen, because that's what a lot of folks do. They're getting to an age and they say, okay, when I hit 65, 70, whatever it is, I'm going to move to Florida. Okay, and that's where I'm going to live forever. And we've seen lots of clients do that, and we've seen all kinds of interesting situations. I mean, we should calculate the percentage of people who make that move and stay. Because a lot of people move, and they're now in this new territory. They're making new friends. Everything is new to them. And, oh, by the way, the grandbabies are back in Columbus.
Right.
And if they're still back in Columbus, then you're going to be flying back and forth. Or I remember one lady, when they moved, she needed medical treatment, severe medical treatment. No problem. Once a quarter, we'll fly up and see the doctors. Well, guess how long that lasted?
Maybe two quarters.
Monthly trips, two quarters at the most. Yeah.
So there's all kinds of these considerations when you're talking to the people. As you said, the size of the house, the stairs, and things like maintenance. I mean, Bobby and I love our house, for example, but the problem we have is we can't get people to show up to do the work. You know, they'll be there, and they don't show up. Well, I get a little upset about that. She's calmer. But nonetheless, that's an issue when you get older and you can't pull the weeds like you used to do and so forth. You can't paint. You don't want to dig the garden, whatever the case may be. So that's another consideration in the home you have or the home you're going to buy. So,
yeah, and going back to that discussion about people moving from, for example, Ohio to Florida, go down there and consider you're not a tourist anymore. Right? This is where it's going to be home base. You're going to be a resident. You're going to live there. This is going to be your day-to-day routine. So perhaps consider something like renting in a certain area, even though you may have
residential
visited,
area.
Right.
Correct.
You may have visited that area for 10, 20 years, but you haven't lived there.
Right.
It's a completely different feeling. And so when you go through that, and it goes into what you always tell Stephen, is kind of test driving your budget, but test drive the lifestyle if you can through renting and not locking yourself into a debt. We'll talk more about this later, but too, the idea of selling the property in one place using cash to buy the next place, is that a good idea or not? If my example of kind of test driving it, I would say probably not, because you've taken all that cash and then you've gone right back into another scenario, illiquid asset.
Right.
Again, not an investment asset, John. Illiquid, an illiquid asset. So there's a lot of pieces to that, and you know there's the misconception about the renting is you're throwing away money. Completely disagree.
Yep.
Completely right. disagree with that. And that, John, you could talk online about that.
We talk about it. Most radio shows where that topic always comes up.
It does come up, and most people think that, therefore, I'm against home ownership. I'm not against home ownership.
Right.
If you can afford it, you should buy it. If you can afford a Mercedes, you should buy it. If you can afford whatever, if you can afford it, buy it. And as I always remind people, I have a friend who says, when you go to buy something, anything, your car, your vacation, your clothes, your house, if you don't have the cash to pay for it when you buy it, you cannot afford it. And that I think that's a really, really important thing.
But John, the bank told me I could buy it.
Oh, isn't that
fun? That an issue? I mean, I think there's a misconception there too, that just because the bank tells you that you can have this big of a loan doesn't
mean
you should.
Don't we remember 2008?
Right. I mean, we've seen it. I saw a scenario where a couple in Boston making $80,000 or $90,000 a year got approved for $500,000 loan.
Right.
Right.
Do the math on that. I mean, that's...
Right. There's no way they can build a financial plan around that.
Right.
Yeah.
We've seen the same thing. We had in our staff meeting on Monday, someone brought up that this person wants to buy a house, and I think their income was like $80,000 a year, and they want to buy a $500,000 house.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way you can afford that kind of place. The reason you think you can is because you go see the banker, and the banker, now, what's their business?
Selling you a loan.
Their business is selling you a loan because they make profit through interest. That's not a bad thing. It just is.
Right.
So when you go in, you need to understand this in your planning. So just because you get pre-approved doesn't mean you can afford what they're pre-approving you for. And so you have to do some conscious investigation.
Same thing with the realtor. Even though the realtor may represent you, do they represent your financial plan?
Well, they don't quite represent you, Stephen.
Well, they go out and find a house for you. I'll say that. And you pay them to do that. But my point is that they don't really know what your financial well-being is.
Exactly.
And they don't need to. That's not their job.
They show you the and what else are they taught to do? And this is being a good salesperson. They go out there and they show you this house, and then they kind of bump you up to the next one and the next one. That's what they should do. That's their job. They're trying to be a profitable person. They're trying to serve you, of course, but then they also have to take care of their own pocketbook. So here we are again. We're coming up against another break. So when we come back, we're going to pick up on this, what to do in retirement about living in housing and renting. Welcome back to Managing to Be Wealthy. I'm John Sestina, and with me tonight, Stephen Lucan, Tyler Cook, both certified financial planners, and we're trying to help you to manage to be wealthy. You know, we appreciate your input, so you may want to email us some questions every now and then so that we can address them on the radio. And you may also have more intimate questions that you would be fearful to expose over the air. So just give our offices a call on Bethel Road, 614-326-3077, and arrange a time when you could meet with one of our planners for a complimentary visit. And by the way, we'll ask you to complete a questionnaire in advance so that the meeting can be more productive with facts rather than just speculation. So guys, we're moving on here talking about retirement, home ownership, renting, and so forth. We have some other circumstances there, Tyler. We were talking at the break about downsizing, some other issues.
Yeah, one of the questions that comes up a lot is, all right, I'm going to plan to sell my place I live in now, the 5-bedroom house you were talking about earlier, take that cash or the equity, and then buy a place that's cheaper in retirement. So say you sell a $500,000 house and you can go buy a $300,000 house. Is that a good idea? And then I think it depends.
Yeah, obviously, that's always our answer.
You were about to say that.
That way we want the questionnaire, so we
right.
can say
that. That's right. Right.
You know, but the numbers we like to use when we consider things like that are it's about the cost of ownership, right? So it's that 1 to 1.5% of the value of the house. That's what it's going to cost you to maintain that thing.
Yeah, let's say that again, because a lot of folks still don't know that or realize that. To own a home, it costs you whatever the value. So you have a $100,000 home. You have to be a little one. You have a $100,000 home. It costs you 1% to 1.5% per month to own that house. So that's $1,000 or $1,500 a month. Half of that is mortgage usually, and the other half is taxes, maintenance, and insurance. And now you've also, through the new tax law, you may have lost some of the quote unquote tax deductions
right.
you once had. So keep that all in mind. Sorry, Tyler, go ahead.
No, it's a great example. And so it's the question is you've sold this house, you've got liquid money right in your hand or in your bank account. Should you take that and dump it into another illiquid asset like a home? Because the costs creep in, the joys of home ownership, as we call it. So in those unexpected things, for example, I had a scenario where a couple lived up in Akron, Ohio all their life, and it was they're going to move to Florida when this person retired. They did it, had a great first 6 months, and then what happened? Here came those hurricanes last year. And they worked out fine.
Different perspective.
Right. Their plan was okay. Again, they're fine. Thank goodness they dodged a bullet with all the hurricanes that happened. But man, that first year, that could have been a huge issue to deal with that first transition year, because they took the cash from up here, reinvested in a house down there. I say invested, but purchased rather.
Right. Thank you.
Yep. And again, it worked out for them. Their plan can sustain it. So it goes back to that factor. It depends. Now, if you're in a scenario where a lot of your net worth is tied up in your house, and you're thinking about selling it and then kind of re-upping again and buying again, that you may want to reconsider that, because you might need that cash on hand to live.
That's one of the examples I use for younger couples who don't have a high income and they live in an expensive area such as New York or a major city. And they're like, well, I have to buy this house because I want to live here. And we'll use this as an investment. So I go back to them. I say, okay, great. So you love New York City. You've lived there your whole life. Now you have all your equity in a place that you've owned. You have no money to retire. What are you going to do? Well, we'll sell the house. Okay, so you're going to sell the house in New York and then move to rural Pennsylvania to live? If you enjoy it, that's great. That's a wonderful plan, but think it through,
mm-hmm,
right? Yeah. So think it through. Can you live in that alternate location after spending your whole life and professional career in an expensive environment?
Exactly. And the other impact is that we're leading up to is the possibility of what's going to happen to you in your later age. For example, what if you're going to deteriorate terribly? And we've gone mm-hmm. through a lot of clients who have had to struggle through this. And that may mean that you can't take care of your house, so you have to leave it. Now, selling that house could be a burden. You're not there. Okay. The house has probably deteriorated in the latter years you were there, you know, because you weren't able to tend to all the other good stuff. So when you go to sell it, if it's a good market, you may be lucky enough to sell it for a decent price. Not a good market, you may be really struggling as to what you're going to do.
Yeah, and Stephen, as you were telling that story, I thought to myself, okay, what if that was 2007?
Right. Forced, right?
Right. And they're planning to sell it in 08 and move to whatever, right. Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Exactly.
And then something like that happens.
Yeah, the timing is so critical.
That can blow the entire plan.
Well, now then, so that you've gone through that, whatever that is financially, and now you're looking at maybe going into a home of some sort, depending on what your health conditions are. And we've seen several people suffer through this. And that may mean we have one client we know who is in the process of dealing with an ailing parent. And so what this person is doing is trying to find the proper home. Mm-hmm. And what happens is every time there's a change, it's another $24,000, $25,000. So that's an issue you have to think about. Where are you going to get the cash to do those big hits when you have to go into it? So you can't very well be, can't be resting your entire financial future on owning some home. You don't know what the consequence of that is.
Isn't that the problem? Or everyone's talking about reverse mortgages being a popular option, but that's one of the downfalls, is being forced to move and you have a reverse mortgage. And again, they've made it more favorable for the consumer, which is great, but that's not your total option then, because right. all of a sudden you've uprooted from the house and you have to relocate, and that reverse mortgage is all of a sudden, it's blown up.
And that really leads, the reverse mortgage and all of this really leads up to what real financial planning is. As we meet with our clients on a very regular basis, I mean, how often are we in contact with a client?
Every couple of weeks, every 2 to 3 weeks.
Every 2 to 3 weeks.
Meeting quarterly,
So it's not a matter of getting a stack of statements in the mail someday and say, here's your investments, how you doing? Call us if you need us. But what we want to do is live through this with a client. So as their life begins to change, we can initiate some discussion of this. How's it going at the house? What's going on? What are your changes? As you said, Tyler, people want to move to another area.
Right.
So you want to work through that so it's not a problem.
Well,
go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to say about the reverse mortgages then. That's been really a fluid situation. About 5-10 years ago, I was saying, don't do a reverse mortgage. They were terrible. And they were. Well, then it changed. And we ran across, what do I keep calling them, Heimlich, but they're...
Heckam.
Heckam.
Reverse mortgage.
That's kind of what you're doing, right?
Right, right. Pushing out all the equity.
Getting all the equity, and it's an interesting approach. You have to have some discipline to do that. But as you pointed out, eventually, even though you don't have to repay that mortgage because of the laws of the reverse mortgage, eventually you're going to sell that house. And will there be any, were you anticipating any profit from that cash? So you did a reverse mortgage, you took that cash, paid off your credit cards, and began to go on vacations and so on and so forth. And we've seen people do that.
Right.
And then you're going to be struggling at the end with a bad choice.
Well, you know, the old reverse mortgages were the last resort, right?
Yes.
It was like, oh my gosh, I spent all my portfolio. I've only got, you know, several thousand dollars from Social Security maybe coming in. The only equity I have, the only place I can go is my house.
Exactly.
The new reverse mortgage, and again, John, I'm the same way. I never thought I'd ever talk about a reverse mortgage in a positive light, but the new ones are incredible.
In some scenarios, they're ideal.
And they're not all this, it's not all the same ones you see on TV, right? They're
right,
not
right,
all
right.
Created
yeah,
don't
equal.
Go by what that.
You have to do with everything, you always have to do deep research.
Right.
Yeah.
But they can be used proactively to, and you do it, you would use a new, use a new reverse mortgage, and you set it up while things are good. It's a proactive tool, just to, like you said, that's the planning piece to it.
Right.
And you do it while things are good so that you've got time, in this case, to let what's available to you grow. And we can you can use it for things like we're talking about, nursing home and other things like that, or somebody coming to the house really is a better scenario. Stephen, to your point about somebody coming in and modifying the home and the steps and whatnot, you can use something like this to pay for that.
Absolutely. Well, it's time for another break. So when we come back, we'll pick up with Managing to Be Wealthy on 610 WTVN.
We're talking all your money questions live. It's financial planning. It's investments. It's managing to be wealthy. With your host, America's father of fee-only financial planning, SIFA's Financial Planner of the Year, and a nationally recognized source for financial planning advice, John Sestina.
Welcome back to Managing to Be Wealthy. I'm John Sestina, and with me tonight, Tyler Cook, Stephen Lucan, both certified financial planners, and we're trying to help you to manage to be wealthy. And we're covering a wide array of things that have to do with your retirement, but they're all a part of a financial plan. A financial plan is a living organism. It's not some place you go on a website, punch in some numbers, and they give you, you know, save $1,583 a month. That's not a financial plan. And you guys have learned that very, very well.
Very fluid.
Yes. It changes, and it could change on a dime. And you need it all the time, even in retirement. And these are some of the issues we're discussing that might hit you in retirement. And I started to introduce the concept of other helpful living outside of your own home. And Tyler, you had some thoughts on that.
Right. It's just in general, people are living longer and they require more care. It's a great thing, obviously, what modern medicine can do to help people live and improve their lifestyles as they get older. But that comes at a cost. And you've got some decisions to make. You know, you're going to move in with your kids in that scenario. Are the kids going to be willing to let them move in with you? So there's, of course, a financial component to it. But what you're seeing, and especially around here in Central Ohio, is you're seeing these continuing care retirement communities,
everywhere.
CRCCs, right? Or CCRC, excuse me. Friendship Village is a big one in Dublin. I drive by every night. It just seems to be getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah, it's like a college campus at this point.
they're everywhere. And there's a reason for it, right? There's a demand for it.
Sure.
Baby comes at a cost, of course, but there's a lot of things to consider when you do that. I'm thinking of one scenario. This has probably been 6 or 7 years ago. A couple up in Michigan, they decided that their plan, they lived in Ohio, their plan was to relocate, and they wanted to move into one of these facilities. They were still in great health. They didn't need the care. Again, kind of being proactive. So they decided that they were going to pay an entry fee, and it's hundreds of thousands of dollars to do this, and then also have a monthly kind of a rent payment, if you will. But the trade-off or the benefit is you have all the care you ever needed right there. So you've got the assisted living type where you can be independent.
And they even station you as you progress through
right.
your elder years.
And if you've seen some of these places, they're beautiful. I mean, they're extremely
like
well constructed.
Clubs, yeah.
Cafeterias and poker rooms. And
that's another consideration was, in this case, the couple's children all of that estate, and they were considering moving, and it was also a social aspect to it, right? Wanting to have interactions with other people, and that was a big piece to it. But if you ask them now, looking back, it's worked out beautifully. They love every part of it. And the scenario is set up to where, again, once they start needing that type of care, it's got peace of mind knowing they can stay right where they're at.
Funny little story with that. There's somebody I work with went into the facility and they were telling me about it, and they ran into a younger gentleman, and she said, "Oh, he's probably in his 50s. And she goes, "Oh, who are you visiting?" He goes, "I live here." And he was self-employed, and he'd go down to the cafeteria with his computer, and he worked there, and he was like, "This is the greatest setup. Have everything taken care of, fixed cost, And that was his lifestyle.
Well, I'll tell you, Bobby and I have talked about it too. I mean, we're a little older now, but you know, even younger, we were saying, why bother with all this other stuff? Yeah. Go live there. Let someone else take care of you.
Yeah. And there's, you know, before you make a decision on one of those types of communities, again, they're not all created equal. You would definitely want to take a look at the financial stability of those particular,
good point.
Places, because some of them are part of bigger networks across the country. Others are more independent, and you want to get a hold of those financial statements and take a look at it. And again, that's a bigger piece of this, because there's different types of contracts, right? You have the one where you can put all that money up front, kind of a lump sum, and then have a graduated or a steady rent payment. And there's others that are less expenses up front, but then they kind of get you in the end, right? When healthcare needs do creep up, you're going to pay it then at the market rate.
Right.
And of course, there's a hybrid between those two. So a lot to dig into and a lot to go through. But
and with the demographics of our country, this is, I mean, baby boomers are getting older.
Right.
So we're going to see a high demand. What's the supply going to be? And then I'm worried about my generation, Gen X. There's going to be a lot of supply of these developments, and then the financial stability will be real critical.
Right.
Which ones will survive, occupancy percentage, right?
Well, plus the demand will be lower.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
if you're looking at it from an investment, I'm going to invest in a retirement home. Well, now it seems to be booming, and in Dublin, they're everywhere I look.
Right.
But later, after those baby boomers go through it, by the time you guys are ready, they'll be half empty.
Right. Occupancy percentage
makes all the difference in the world.
I think you're going to start to see, too, this is my personal opinion, but a shift to more in-home care, different companies coming in and again, making modifications to the existing place at a cheaper cost than what it's going to cost to live in one of these places.
Right. Yeah. That could be, well, but it, like everything else, whether it be buying a mutual fund, a life insurance policy, a home or whatever, whenever you're going to make any financial decision, if you don't have a planner, you need to be able to compare. And so one of the tricks I learned from a dear, dear friend many, many years ago, and he said, when you want to make a comparison, what you do is call three providers. So you call provider A, B, and provider C, and you say, look, I'm thinking about moving into a nursing home, and yours came across my, don't come over, but send me a proposal. And so the guy sends a proposal. Then you call B, same thing. I'm thinking, send me, don't come over. And C, now you have three proposals from three different folks. And then you call back A and you say, listen, while I was waiting for yours, I got one from B as well. Can I send you B's? And if there's anything wrong with it, will you point it out? Now, you're not doing this to humiliate anyone or make fun of anyone. What you're trying to do is learn here. You don't have any expert help with you. And so you're going to find out some information. Then you do C to B. And then you do it again. So you've done it three times. I promise you, by the time you've done that, you're going to find out about some of the costs. What about the drugs? What about if you're on specialty drugs? Does that make a difference? What if you have specialty doctors? What? There's a thousand things that you have to look at in every financial decision. So you can't just say, okay, this one has a nice ad. It's on glossy paper. You know how I feel about glossy paper.
That's right.
If it's on glossy paper, then it's probably no good.
Yeah.
So you have to look into the numbers. You have to investigate every aspect of this for your future.
And Stephen, you mentioned it briefly, but occupancy rate is a big thing with these communities. You typically want to see that like 90% or higher as a starting point. And then rate increases. And when I was going through that scenario with the other couple, that was my first question. Okay, here, that's the rate today. What's it going to be tomorrow?
Right. What inflation are we dealing with?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there's also debt ratings, right? They go out and rate these different types of communities and how capable they are to pay back their debt. And then you know, at the end of the day, profitability too. Are they able to stay afloat? Are they spending less than what they're bringing in?
Oh, you're using the dirty word profit.
That's
there,
right.
Tyler.
I can't say that.
Oh my goodness.
But it's a big deal. And obviously, I know here in town too, they'll do different kind of meet and greets where you can go and it's people that live there will welcome others that are interested in living there, and so they kind of get a feel for what the actual community is like on a day-to-day basis. Now, you can only learn so much from a one-time visit, but they'll do different theme gatherings or parties. So that's maybe another good way to kind of dip your toe in the water and see if that's something you're interested in.
What else is interesting is to think how far we've come from the good old days, so to speak, when the Waltons, you guys are too young. You remember the Walton TV show.
Jed.
That's the Beverly Hillbillies.
Okay.
Another favorite of mine. But what used to happen there was the family would come together.
Right.
And they would take care of each other. Now we're farming them out.
Society, it's families across the country.
Exactly right. Yeah. So part of what's interesting is to see that change going on in the family structure. And so maybe that's going to, everything ebbs and flows. So it may well again happen that families are going to decide, come back in. Well, like Stephen, your grandma was with your dad and all of his sister and other people. So we have that situation to be wary of too. Well, this is quite a comprehensive topic. You guys did a great job.
We only covered half.
We scratched the surface.
We get through one. Yeah, we still have about 15 pages of note. So, well, we'd love for you to check up with us. Call us at 614-326-3077. Set up your complimentary visit. This is John Sestina saying thank you for joining us on Managing to be Wealthy.